Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Fun, entertaining, knowledgeable.
All right.
Live and local, it's time for the Fan Morning Show with Bart Winkler.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Bart Winkler. That's Sam Schmitz, Ryan Horvath doing BetQL Daily today. We'll be back on Thursdays and Fridays and Mondays. Now, Horvath getting that radio.com love, part of that Wagertainment Network. Lots to bet on. Dude's been on a heater so far. Just throwing around money on the unranked Kentucky Wildcats, among others. Good for him. I'm not jealous at all. I'm not. I'm proud of him. Also, I can't bet. I locked myself out of my account. I had a bad night. A couple of about 2 years ago now. But I'm better for it. Now, if I can just snap all the other vices and addictions that I have. We'll talk here with Nick Kostos. You better, you bet. Radio.com sports betting expert. Insider calls brought to you by Bet Rivers. Go check out all the latest lines today at betrivers.net. Be sure to check out the You Better You Bet podcast for more of Nick's analysis. Search You Bet wherever you find your podcast. Again, Sam Schmitz is with me today. Horvath on Tuesdays and Wednesdays is also part of the Wagertainment family because he's on the BetQL Daily show. My buddy Horvath not here today, Nick, but he is on a heater right now. I mean, I'm like jealous.
I saw like he had a big bet on Kentucky over the weekend, right? So I think that worked out pretty well for him.
He's hitting like 65-70% in the last month.
Well, you know what that means.
Yeah, he's gonna go on this show and just give out losers left and right, left and right. Hey, what was the best run you've ever been on?
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, look, I've been doing this for like I had literally. And I know people will hear this and be like, wow, like this guy is a degenerate, whatever. I had 21 bets last night on NBA and college basketball combined. And I ended up like, I don't want to give like the exact dollar amount, but right around even, like with the 21 bets I had last night. So when you literally like basically like within like $15 of being even. So I feel like when you bet as much as I do, and like, and I, when I say I bet a lot, I don't mean that's not reckless. Like I handicap every single game every night. So I kind of like, I know what I'm doing, like, when it comes to these games. I don't win all the time. But, I mean, when you bet as much as I do, I mean, there are just so many hot streaks. There are so many bad streaks. The one that really stands out, maybe because it has my fandom associated with it, is I killed the 2007 NFL playoffs. I'm a Giants fan when the Giants beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl the first time. And had the Giants on the money line. They were underdogs in every single playoff game. That was great against the spread. Eli to win MVP. That was one where I pretty much felt unstoppable. And I had a Thursday. I think it was actually 2008, the year that Steph Curry went off at Davidson, like when the nation was introduced to Steph Curry. And a buddy of mine, my buddy Pat, and I took off from work the opening Thursday and Friday to like totally degen out and watch all the games, literally in my mother's basement at the time. And I don't think we lost a bet on the opening Thursday of the NCAA tournament. Like, we were red hot. We won everything. We were up a lot of money. And then, like, idiots. I think the first game that Friday morning was Gonzaga against Davidson and Curry. And Gonzaga was a favorite, and we were like, Gonzaga's going to kill them. We bet on Gonzaga, and Steph Curry scored like 40 points and ripped our hearts out, and we like lost everything we had won the day before. So those are just a couple that stand out.
Well, I've noticed a trend, and maybe this is something you can use going forward. Always bet against Wisconsin teams. The Giants beat the Packers that year. That Davidson team beat the Badgers. There's the only handicapping you need, man.
Well, I mean, I did ride the Packers in 2010 all the way to a Super Bowl championship, underdogs in every game. That was the top, actually, you know, they have favorites in a couple of them, but that Packers team was really good. And look, Milwaukee scored 139 points last night, covered the spread against, listen, Minnesota's not very good with the new coach, but can only beat who's on your schedule. So, I mean, Milwaukee, the Bucks starting to play a little better now. We'll see about the Badgers. I don't know how high their ceiling is. But yeah, at least the Bucks are starting to play a little better. And I'm kind of a little bullish on the Milwaukee Brewers heading into the season.
Yeah, I am too. I wanted to talk about that because I saw some different over-unders, and I'm not sure what they are at Bet Rivers, but I saw the Brewers around 82. Pretty much that whole NL Central is right in the mid-80s, except for the Pirates. And really, anybody could come away with this division. I think at first glance, you look at it and think, the Cardinals have Arenado, and they're probably the favorites. And then you think, oh, but they also did nothing else. The Brewers, there's a version of this team that can be good. The Cubs, I don't know what they're doing. And then the Reds, like, are trying, but they're failing at it. Where do you look at, obviously, it sounds like you would go over with the Brewers on the win total. Where do you look at the NL Central at this point?
Yeah, I kind of like the Brewers a little bit with the odds being where they are. I love Cincinnati. So I was on Cincinnati last year, had futures on the Reds. I feel like everyone associated, by the way, in the wagertainment universe, whether it's Joe O, myself, Eli Herskovich, like we all had futures on the Cincinnati Reds and had to watch as they scored literally zero runs in like 1,000 playoff innings in only two games last year, which was absolutely brutal. So I do like the Reds, but I think it's with the odds. I think the Brewers are my favorite pick to win the NL Central, and certainly like the Brewers over win total right now at 82.5. And you mentioned there's a version of this team that could be good with Milwaukee. I would actually say there's a version of this Milwaukee team that could be very good. I don't know if this Brewers team could be great, because I feel like we want to assign that word to teams like the Dodgers and the Padres and maybe even the Mets, who I think are going to be really good this year. But I think the Brewers could end up being very good this year. You know, obviously, like, I think I hate Craig Counsell because he was on the Diamondbacks team that beat my Yankees in 2001. But Counsell, a pretty good manager with the way he handles the pitching staff. I think the team's defense has a chance to be very good. Obviously, you're banking on a bounce back from Christian Yelich, which I think is fair to expect given a small sample size last season. Pure continues to break out. Absolutely love this bullpen. Arguably the best bullpen in baseball, you know, when you go from middle relief all the way to Hader at the very end. Love the bullpen. Brandon Woodruff is a very underrated starting pitcher, like at the top end of the rotation here. And again, you've got Counsell to kind of massage things with the pitchers here. So I'm kind of bullish on Milwaukee here, over 82.5 wins. And like you mentioned with St. Louis, like, great, like, yeah, I know the Cardinals grabbed the headlines, right, with Nolan Arenado, and it is a headline-grabbing move, but their defense is really bad. I don't know. I'm not feeling the St. Louis Cardinals this year. I like the Brewers and the Reds right now in the NL Central, and I do like that Brewers over win total.
When you look at, like, the over-unders, do you try to stay away from – because the Dodgers are – where I see them right now, just pulling something up quick, 103.5, and then the Pirates, 58.5. Do the extreme ones entice you, or do you try to stay away from those?
Well, I think it really, we take it on a case-by-case basis, right, where I'll tell you what, I wouldn't take the under on the Dodgers. I don't know that I'm rushing to bet the over, but I would certainly not take that under. I mean, this team is going to be an absolute buzzsaw this year. I think everyone knows about, you know, the Bauer acquisition and, you know, the rest of the studs that the Dodgers have, and I wouldn't bet the under on the Padres either. Like, I think the Padres are going to be really good, too. Probably not quite as good as the Dodgers, but I'm not rushing to bet unders on either of those two teams. Like, I actually think, you know, when we look at the Pirates and then the Baltimore Orioles, who are kind of like the equivalent of the Pirates in the American League, I know the numbers are low. I wouldn't bet either team's overs. Like, I think both of these teams are going to be really bad. Like, the NL Central isn't great, but all the teams in the NL Central are, I think, a decent amount better than the Pirates, going to beat up on Pittsburgh. And certainly all the teams in the American League East, including the Red Sox, who I think might be a little better than people expect, are going to destroy the Baltimore Orioles here. So, I don't want to give like a bad answer here, like a waffling answer here, but it's not that I veer away from it. I mean, I might actually end up playing over on the Dodgers, as crazy as that sounds here. So no, I don't stay away We just try and take it on an individual case-by-case basis. And I would consider betting under on the Pirates because that team is going to be absolutely dreadful this year.
With that in mind, Nick Costos here, You Better You Bet, coming up again today on the Radio.com app this afternoon. Because I was talking about how, you know, you guys, you really look at everything you can before you're confident to make a bet. Whereas I pulled up some lines earlier and I saw the Warriors and the Pacers. I think the Pacers are favored by two. I like the Warriors better, so I'm going to vote on and bet the Warriors. How much do you have to put in time-wise before you think this is a game I'm going to do? Because if you're betting on 21 different games, man, I mean that's a lot of work.
Well, it is, and I think it really it comes from, you know, there's a running storyline that kind of develops through the course of the season, and you kind of cover the stuff every day, and if people really want to be good at this, and you can do it kind of, you know, casually, and that's what's great about what we do on You Better You Bet and what your buddy Horvat does with Joe O on BetQL Daily. If you want to be a casual bettor, you know, we do the work so you don't have to. You listen to the show. We handicap all the games. We give you our analysis. If you disagree with us, you don't have to, you know, take all our picks. You could, you know, go against us, right? And that's totally okay. But if you really want to be a serious bettor, which you don't have to be, and I'm not insinuating that anyone has to do that, but if you really want to be good at this, it does require a lot of effort, whether you want to kind of do what my co-host does, and he builds literally math models, spits out numbers on games, and he's very good at it. So his college basketball numbers are insane. He will give numbers out the night before, and then the next day they will move 3 to 5 points in his favor. It's absolutely wild. Or you want to do more like I do. I've got a bunch of notebooks, and I sit down literally every day, and I go through the box scores and read about the games from the night before. Then look at the injury report for the games coming up tonight, go through a bunch of stats and go through it's not just stats and trends. It's also what are certain teams good at? It's like with the NFL, right? When we say, well, this team's third cornerback is weak, this team's slot receiver is excellent, this is a major advantage here, so we're going to bet a player prop over here. We like that team for this reason. It's really the same thing in basketball, right? Where the Charlotte Hornets the other night against the Utah Jazz, we know Charlotte prioritizes rim protection. They are willing to give up a lot of open three-pointers because they want to stop you from scoring at the rim. What did the Jazz do? They hit 28 three-pointers, a franchise record the other night. So we know when Charlotte plays teams, if it's a really good three-point shooting team, they're really going to get burned because they're willing to give that up. So I think it's there is a lot of work that goes into each individual game with the injury report and matchups, but it's also being able to look at two teams and knowing, and this comes with work, obviously, okay, this team does this poorly and this well. This team does vice versa. How does it kind of match up? Then looking at the point spread, knowing what the market moves are, and being able to come to a decision from there. So I know it sounds really complicated, but I do this literally 7 days a week, you know, basically the entire year. So, I mean, I'm able to do it and distill the information really quickly. But it is a lot of work, for someone that really wants to get into it and kind of do it themselves. But here's the good news. Again, you don't have to if you don't want to, because we literally do the work for you.
You Better You Bet. Again, you can find it on the Radio.com app. Maybe, you know, I know there's some good ones out there, but maybe the greatest app that's ever been invented since smartphones came out, I would say. I mean, I would die for this app. I bleed Radio.com.
Well, I basically do, yeah.
Oh, God, I just love it. Did you ever hear the podcast with the TikTok girls? Oh, my God, so good.
No,
so raw and real. Oh, man.
I made my girlfriend delete TikTok 6 months ago because I felt it was rotting her brain. It was all she was doing. So I was you have to delete this now.
Well, that's probably a good idea. With the NBA, so the storylines and everything, I've decided that the Nets are going to win the East. And I think that everybody is being kind of overcautious about it, looking for reasons why they wouldn't. Oh, they don't play defense. Oh, one ball or whatever. You're going to get to a playoffs and the series, and you can look at depth, you can look at coaching. You're gonna have a team with Kevin Durant and James Harden and Kyrie Irving. Assuming health, that team is not losing. Am I wrong to think it's that black and white right now?
No, I mean, I think I said that with you guys. Maybe I said it last week, but I've been saying it. I don't know if I said it with you guys, but we've been saying it basically since the Harden trade got done. Brooklyn at any kind of plus money to win the Eastern Conference, I feel is an absolute bargain because, look, I feel like I pissed a lot of – I got a lot of hate tweets last week after I did this spot because I was kind of killing Coach Bud and the Bucks. But, we have to be honest, right? I'm sorry. Milwaukee is not beating Brooklyn in a playoff series. It is just not happening. Sorry to Bucks fans. I would love to see the Bucks at some point win a title with Giannis. It is not happening this year as long as the big three stays healthy in Brooklyn. The Celtics are an absolute disaster right now. Look at the standings. Boston's under 500 right now after the loss last night against the Dallas Mavericks. Philly would be the one team I would give a chance just because of Joel Embiid. But that team really lacks a killer instinct, and they have yet to show it, so I don't really like them to take down the Brooklyn Nets. The Raptors feel like they probably are at least one piece away from being able to contend. So I think Brooklyn is definitely going to win the East, and I think the question really becomes Bart. And I was kind of on the train that Brooklyn won't be able to beat the Lakers when they get to the NBA Finals, right? And I still think, you know, the Lakers are on a bad streak right now, but people have to remember it's not just Anthony Davis that's out. Dennis Schroeder is also out. And Schroeder's kind of like one of the engines that kind of runs the whole deal here, and they do not have a lot of juice on offense right now without Schroeder and Davis, even with LeBron James. But once they get those two guys back healthy, like, I would never bet like a Paul George like team when he's the second option on a team like to get to the NBA Finals. So we eliminate the Clippers, and then it's like in the West, who do you like? Do you like the Nuggets? I don't. Do you believe in the Jazz? I don't to that degree. The Phoenix Suns? Probably not. So I think we're kind of staring down the barrel here for Lakers, Nets, NBA Finals, and I have been thinking, you know, Lakers are definitely going to win that series. But with the way the Nets are playing recently, I'm not ready to say yet that I think the Nets will beat the Lakers once we get there, but I think it could be a lot closer, right? Because all the Nets need to do, and I think people should watch out for this when the Nets play games, right? Because the book has kind of become on the Nets, well, they play no defense. Well, it's okay that they don't play like 1992 New York Knicks-level defense for 48 straight minutes. All they really need to do is like lock down, not even for like a full quarter, for like 6 to 8 minutes a game, right? And then play like average to below average defense the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Because the other team can't stop them. So it's like there's nothing that can be done to stop them with those three weapons that they have and the ancillary shooters. Like, if Bruce Brown's going to score 29 points or, like, not do that, but if he's going to be a reliable scorer like he was last night against Sacramento, Joe Harris is the best three-point shooter in the league, like, you're not going to be able to stop them. So that's why I kind of think, like, this could be, like, a truly epic NBA Finals with the Nets and the Lakers. And I know a lot of time till we get there, but I don't know who in the West is taking down the Lakers, and I really don't know who in the East is taking down the Nets.
Well, one thing I've learned is audiences do not like when I talk in absolutes or get hyperbolic. I don't know, but the Nets are going to win the East, so that's where I'm at. So I'm glad that
I agree.
You talked it out with me. Nick, I love what you do. You better you bet on the radio.com app. Only problem with it is there's so many other great pieces of content on this app that sometimes I go try to find your show and I just get lost in the world of wonder that is radio.com.
I totally understand and I can't really begrudge you for that. But, and I will say, I'm excited as we get closer to the NFL draft, talk some Packers with you, my man. That's my favorite thing to talk about with you, is some Green Bay Packers. And I kind of like, I just want to give you a vote of confidence here. I kind of love your approach. Like, you just want a Super Bowl, man. I don't necessarily agree with everything you say about the Packers, which is okay, but I love your passion for the team, and I hope that the listeners kind of appreciate that as well.
They don't.
Well, I mean, they should, because, listen, they can disagree with you, but they can't hate on the fact that you are a diehard, true, passionate fan and kind of, like, express your views in a really smart way. So I just wanted to tell you that because I'm a fan of yours and look forward to talking Packers with you.
Nick, oh, my God, this whole last 2 minutes is just great for promos and the bosses. Thank you, Nick.
You're welcome, buddy.
Nick Kostos. You find him on You Better You Bet and radio.com, the sports betting expert Nick Kostos joining us. Thanks to our friends at BetRivers. Go to betrivers.net to check out all the lines. Be sure to check out the You Better You Bet podcast for more of Nick's analysis. Just search You Bet wherever you find your podcast. To what Nick was saying there, I do want a Super Bowl. It's not that I'm like the season. I think where my message is getting lost is not every season is going to be a championship season. I'm not stupid that I don't understand that. The Brewers this year, I'm not thinking World Series. I'm wanting them to win the NL Central. I want to talk about this with Tim because it does contradict my other approaches. But again, case-by-case basis, like Nick was saying, the Packers have Aaron Rodgers at the twilight of his career. Every year should be a Super Bowl or bust year under those circumstances. Every year should. Every year. Giannis, is it NBA Finals or bust? No, but it's very close, especially since you had your chance a couple of years ago and you blew it. And then all these teams getting so close puts weight on the other teams because us as fans are really getting stressed out about it. So if the Bucks fail again, it's not just, oh, the Bucks failed and they failed 2 years ago and last year. It's that plus every Packer loss of the last decade and when the Brewers got close. And then the Badgers. And then you get mad that Marquette's never won a tournament game with Woj. And then so it all, because we all root for the same teams, and I know there's some of you that like the Packers, the Cubs, or the Twins, whatever. But those of us that every team in the state matters like it is life and death, that's where we want the Super Bowl. When the Packers have Jordan Love and he's the starter and it's 2023 and is it going to be Super Bowl or bust? No. And you're going to look for positives in that season to hope the team grows. But with Rodgers in 2020, Rodgers in 2021, absolutely Super Bowl or bust. There's no question about that. So thank you, Nick Costos, for saying exactly what I needed to hear. Was that too much shilling for the app or no? I'm not lying. I love the app. If I didn't love the app, I'd feel guilty about it. I love the Radio.com app.
I was going to say you didn't do enough.
Oh, thank you. You're probably right.
You can never talk about the Radio.com app enough.
There's so much on there. And we just added the Locked On Network.
Right. I mean, there's Duncan Robinson's podcast.
Duncan Robinson has a podcast.
Who knows? Maybe in the future, Sam Merrill will get one if he gets enough runtime.
Yes. Anybody. I mean, KD. You know how busy KD is? Guy's an all-star starter. He's got a Radio.com podcast. It's a tremendous app. You can listen to us live and podcast version. What a joy. What an absolute joy. I like that Nick is feeling good about the Brewers. Colton Wong is a big reason for that. We will hear from the Brewers' new second baseman. And really how it's not on him, but he's got some pressure now to make Keston Hira better. I don't know if that's fair or not, but that's the way it's going to play out. We'll hear from Colton Wong coming up.
Analytics is taking over the game, you know, too much. Analytics are great, you know, they're good, but they don't need to take over the game, you know. That's something that's just, it's not right, you know. Let the players play the game.
That's Francisco Lindor with the New York Mets, and I bring that up to bring up Colton Wong. Analytics, again, PSA, sometimes we lump all stats into being analytics. And so I think we tend to hate analytics for that reason. But there's analytics that have, you know, changed fundamental parts of what baseball was. The never bunt movement. I get it. You're giving up an out. So most times the numbers would tell you that you're not going to benefit from a bunt in the long run. That's fine. To say never bunt, ever, 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 I still think there needs to be, you know, eye test needs to be part of the game. Where it really comes in, which I think blows a lot of people's minds, especially if you've been watching the game for a long time, Bart Winkler, Sam Schmitz on The Fan, Tim Allen will join us 9 o'clock hour. Maybe we'll bring this up with him too, is the shifting can get a little obnoxious. At least that's what it seems like. You got the most obnoxious part of it is when you shift because a guy normally hits, you know, to the right side of the field. And so the third baseman's at second, the shortstop's out between second and first, and there's a whole part of the diamond just available to you. Now, I haven't done this in a while, so I'm happy to do it. When I played kickball, I would a lot of times try to kick the ball into the left center gap. Because I'm not very fast. But if I kick it over there, get it over the third baseman's head, I can get the first base across the field. I never tried to kick it to the right side of the field. That's where first base is. They're going to get me out. So when I play the same teams over and over the summer, I come to the plate, they send more of their guys over there. That's fundamental. You know where he's going to kick it slash hit it. Put the guy there. But never do they just abandon first base, because if they did, I'd just kick it down the line and then I'd be on first base. What drives people nuts with the shifting is when you move a guy from third and you move the shortstop and a whole side of the diamond is open, and then the guy doesn't like take advantage of it. He still tries to swing as if it's normal, and he hits it right to where the shift is, when you think just bunt it down the line or do a little check swing, or you can angle and hit it where they're not. But they don't do that. So I think that's what drives some people crazy about shifting. And until that happens more, until more people take advantage of that, you're going to get a lot of teams shifting because it works. Lindor went on to say more about he doesn't like shifting. You know, if he's playing shortstop, he wants to play shortstop. Which, again, Colton Wong, this is an interesting case, and this is something he talked about the first time he met with the media last week, and he talked about it again, and Buster Olney of ESPN sat in on the Brewers Zoom yesterday because he's working on this story about shifting and guys going to new teams, and he wanted to see if Colton Wong felt the same way. And so it's interesting the back and forth they had bringing up Lindor, and really how Colton, he's almost like, the takeaway I'm getting from Colton Wong is he came to Milwaukee because he was wanted, and he also wanted something different. He's been with the Cardinals for a long time. He knows the Cardinals' way. He knows how they play baseball. He wants maybe a new challenge. He wants to try something new, and the Brewers, with their shifting philosophy and analytics and stuff like that, they are providing him that opportunity. So I thought this was a good back and forth with Buster Olney and Colton Wong.
Colton, you know, the Brewers, you made reference to the shifting, the aggressive shifting that they do, and they have had at times non-traditional second basemen, you know, Travis Shaw, Mike Moustakas. What were your conversations with them as you went through the process about what you would bring to the table and what they were looking for from you defensively?
Yeah, I think they understood just what they were getting, you know, when they were talking to me. Obviously, you know, I'm a guy that loves to play second base. I enjoy playing defense, but, you know, the shifting aspect, I'm accepting it. You know, I feel like that's part of the game nowadays. And, you know, with the analytics that we have, they're going to put me in the best position to make plays for these pitchers. And at the end of the day, that's all I really want to do. Keep, you know, guys off the bases, keep these pitchers in as long as possible and, you know, allow us to do some damage and win games.
So Francisco Lindor in his Zoom call yesterday, he basically told reporters, look, I don't like shifts. Mm-hmm. You, it sounds like you're completely open-minded to whatever they bring to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm with him. Like, I'm not a huge fan of shifts, but you know what? That's part of the game. I think we got to adjust to the game. We got to adjust to the times. And, you know, whatever they want me to do, I'm ready to do it. You know, that's why I signed that contract, is because I wanted to be a Brewer and I wanted to do what the Brewers do. So I'm excited for this opportunity. And, you know, if shifting is going to be it, then, hey, put me in the best position I can.
I think that's great. I mean, it reiterates that, yeah, it's maybe not a part of the game that these guys – even grew up with, even in, you know, if you're in your mid 30s or lower 30s or around 30, but it is the way the game is trending. And Colton, he wasn't forced to sign here. He wasn't traded here. He wasn't drafted here. Yeah, he's getting paid handsomely to be here, but he also, that was a factor. Do I want to go to a place that shifts a little more aggressively than what I'm used to? And he decided that, yeah, either the money convinced him or the opportunity convinced him or whatever, but he's not going to sign the deal, willingly come here, and then complain about the process. This is what he signed up for. So that's what Colton is taking the approach of, and I thought that was an interesting exchange. Colton, you know, they're so familiar with the Brewers when you're in St. Louis. He knows how the Brewers play. He knows what they like to do. And he's noticed that the chemistry is one of the things that brought him over here too.
I mean, obviously you could see it, you know, playing. Everyone was pulling on the same string, and then you could see how, you know, every time we play against the Brewers, I mean, this was a team that was competing to the very last out, you know, and that was something that drew my attention and wanted to come here. Is I knew this team was never afraid to play anybody, you know, was never afraid to go out there and compete against the best in the league. So I'm excited to be a part of this group, and hopefully I can, you know, bring something special to it as well.
So you look at the defense right now, and we were talking earlier, Colton Wong is entrenched at second. That's the guy. The rest is up for grabs. Now, we thought maybe it would be, obviously, Keston Hira at second. Keston Hira is going to get shifted over to first base, and it is going to be a challenge. There's things I think we're overthinking when it comes to Keston at first. He's still going to take ground balls. He's used to that. But as Council was talking about earlier this week, too, what he has to get used to now is normally you take the ground ball, you whip it. He's got to see the other guy get the ground ball and then catch it. It's a lot of this is going to be how can he receive the baseball? And when it's high, can he get it? When it's low, can he get it? And so it's almost up to Colton Wong. He can't just throw it in an area and say, oh, this guy is a certain size and he's played first base. I'm sure he'll get it. He almost has to be more specific about his throwing and build that chemistry with Keston. So unfair or not, and I don't know if it's what he signed up for in this regard, but Keston's success at first, some of that's going to be attributed to how Colton Wong and him build that chemistry.
I think that's just going to come down to me and him playing together. You know, it took me and Goldschmidt a little bit to get comfortable as well. You know, I like to range to my left a lot. I like to range to my right. So, you know, hopefully I can take a little burden off Keston with having to go too far. You know, I know it's a new position for him and he's got a lot to learn. So I'm just hoping that, you know, with me, you know, being able to range to my left like I do and taking those balls away, it'll take some stress off and where he can just focus on doing the little things at first and not trying to, you know, do too much.
I'm sure that's a part for the Brewers that makes them more comfortable to do this. They're not just signing a guy that is great offensively and he plays second and his infield is, you know, not super. They're signing a gold glover. So they feel like that's going to help this process. And again, we'll see how it plays out. I'm excited. We don't hear from Keston today. We're going to hear from Council and Lorenzo Cain today. But I am excited when we hear from Keston because I'm telling you, you hear any of these interviews, if you've caught a little bit here on the show or other shows or the Brewers website or whatever, Keston Hira at first is coming up a lot, whether it's asking the pitchers about having that behind him, whether it's Council and Andy Haynes, the hitting coach, us talking about it, Chris Hook, the pitching. I mean, everybody is in one way, shape, or form being asked about Keston at first. That's going to be the big question mark going into this season. Where are you right now, Sam, with this infield? You got Wong at second, that's entrenched. I'm going to hope that Keston works out. We don't know for sure. And then shortstop and third, I don't feel like, I think I feel a little more confident actually than I thought I might 2 weeks ago. Maybe Travis Shaw's signing does some of that for me, if of course he makes the team.
Yeah, I mean, with third base, I really hope Shaw can lock it down because I'm fine with probably playing Orlando Arcia a couple games at third base, but I don't want to make it, you know, like a platoon. I want Shaw to get the majority of starts there. And with first base, I know I've been ragging on Keston and all that. I am scared, but I do think with a full spring training that I think it'll be okay. I'm still a little nervous, but we'll see what happens. Like I said, I'm just glad we have a full spring training to work this out. And you know, hopefully Urias can pan out because I am just not, still not over this Trent Grisham thing. I don't think I will be for a while.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad that bothers you because I think too many people just let that one go. Trent Grisham's very good.
Well, it's not just Grisham. Like, I would also want Zach Davies on this roster too. I would love him behind Adrian Hauser and all them.
Yeah, I don't know where Eric Lauer, he came over in that deal. I don't know where he fits in. Brett Anderson was talking too this week. Council, it's Woodruff and Burns. That's the 1-2. That's as set in stone as you're going to get from the Brewers. Adrian Hauser's 3. Brett Anderson will be in the starting rotation. And then, do they put Freddie back there? Do they go with Eric Lauer?
I have no idea what to expect from Freddie Peralta this year.
Yeah, well, you never do,
right? But I've pretty
much... Does Jordan Zimmermann get a boost?
I don't think so. Unless we'll see what happens. Maybe he goes down to this Arizona facility and figure out some spin rate stuff. Hopefully that'll help. But, you know, I'm pretty much just thinking Woodruff, Burns, Hauser. I feel pretty good about Anderson, but I have no faith in Lauer and Lindblom.
Lindblom's the other one. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just don't have any faith when he takes the mound.
I'm throwing Anderson into the rotation right now because I heard Council say it yesterday. Council was talking about the starting pitching, and he essentially he named Anderson as a guy. He said, we have two starters that are ground ball pitchers in Hauser and Anderson, and we've got Woodruff, who's kind of there as well. So he named Anderson as a starting rotation guy. So that's why when I'm going to assume Anderson's in the rotation, and anything can happen in these 6 weeks. You know, he had some blister problems last year, Brett Anderson did. But I'm going to assume right now that he is at least in, and then those other spots are going to be between Lauer and Lindblom. And Lauer, I think, to make that trade better, to go back to the Grisham trade, he's got to get in there. That was part of what you liked about it. And Urias, he's got to work too. That's why you're going to see him at shortstop basically every day in spring training, because they know what they have in Arcia, so they got to go with Luis to see if this is going to work out, because this could be a really bad trade that did not work out for the Brewers. And I don't know if they can afford that kind of stuff right now. Another thing from Colton Wong. They asked him about his previous success at the building formerly known as Miller Park. And what bothered me about this, I'm not bothered that there's a new name for Miller Park. I know it's going to be hard to not say it. And that's going to take some time because it's the same building with a different name. It's going to take some time to change that name for us, you know, when we say it. I don't like the revisionist history. There's one thing that, was it Stearns that said it? Who said it? Yeah, it was Stearns. He said, Colton Wong, you know, he's hit good. He's hit well at American Family Field. But I'm saying, no, he hasn't. He's never hit at American Family Field. He's hit at Miller Park. You bought the sponsorship rights starting this year. You know, I had a bachelor party one time. I went to a bachelor party at Miller Park. I've never been to a bachelor party at American Family Field.
Didn't Woodruff, too, make a reference to Miller Park?
Woodruff made a reference. Colton Wong tries to make a reference to American Family Field. He has not yet let that come off the tongue. He's asked about his success at Miller Park. I'll stop it when he tries to name what the stadium is called now.
You know, it's just a confidence level of knowing that when you hit a ball good there, you know, there's a good chance it's going out. You know, when I played in Bush is, as we all know, it's a pitcher's park. You know, it's one of those things where the gaps aren't big, but the balls really get caught up in the gaps. And, you know, down the lines is basically, you know, all you have. Where at Miller Park, you kind of, or, you know, Family First Field, you kind of have.
Oh, Family First Field, he goes with. It's going to be hard.
Where at Miller Park, you kind of, or, you know, Family First Field, you kind of have.
Oh, Colton, no. If you don't know, you don't say it. If you don't know, you don't say it. That is an interview technique for sure. You don't know.
I mean, even just go with like the Milwaukee Baseball Stadium or something like that.
Or just call it Miller Park.
I give him credit. He tried it, but didn't work.
just call it Miller Park.
Or at Miller Park, you kind of, or, you know, Family First Field, you kind of have.
Ah, Colton. Good try. You'll get there. Colton Wong talking yesterday. Hey, I want to remind you guys about Windows Select. A lot of great deals, of course, not just on the windows. We're talking a buy one, get one deal on the windows. We're talking no payments for a full year with Windows Select. They also do siding and doors. So it's more than just the windows at Windows Select. They do siding and doors, and they've got a great deal on the doors right now. They offer energy efficient doors as well, fully customizable entry doors that are safe and secure. They come with a double lifetime warranty like all their other products. Plus, right now, you get a free Ring doorbell as well when you go with Windows Select to enhance the safe and security that you'll have. And again, great deals. No payments for an entire year. You have free installation if you take advantage this week. That's a this week offer. Plus, it's all backed with a double lifetime warranty. And there's the other great deals on the windows, like I mentioned, the buy one, get one. It's Window Select, 262-703-3500, 262-703-3500. Check them out, windowselect.com. AM The Fan, radio.com app, the most wonderful piece of technology ever invented. I'm Bart Winkler, Sam Schmitz. Coming up today from 2 to 6, another episode of Rami and Tim. But if you don't want to wait until then, you don't have to. Tim Allen's going to join us in about 10 minutes. I'm optimistic about the Brewers in a way that doesn't make sense with my personality. So we'll talk to Tim about that coming up. And Rami, still battling internet issues. Well, he's actually here right now, and since you moved over to the microphone, I'll put
you on. Thought that's what you were setting up for.
No, I was just teasing you.
I'm not that desperate for a microphone. I heard you say my name. I'm in studio, so I'm...
You moved back for a part-time job. You sure about that?
I'm that desperate for money, not a microphone.
Okay.
All right, this is fun.
Yeah, we'll talk to you later.
Yep.
Rami Makhlouf, the one, the only. As far as sports tonight, there's a game that nobody was anticipating because it was scheduled this weekend. Marquette is going to North Carolina tonight. It's going to be on ESPN2. Now, obviously, Marquette is in the Big East and North Carolina is in the ACC. And you don't see games like this happen at this time of the year much. You especially don't see them happen just on a whim. But with COVID canceling and moving games, North Carolina is desperately trying to get into the tournament. A lot of these blue blood programs have not been good. Duke's starting to win a little bit. There's a question if they'll get in. North Carolina, they got to get more wins on the resume. Not that a win against Marquette's going to be super impressive because they've not been playing well. They did beat Wisconsin, which kind of sucks for Wisconsin. But North Carolina, they need wins. And Marquette was a program that could make the trip there and give it to them. As we talked to Don Wachilis yesterday from the College Sports Show, this is a trend that I would like to see continue in sports.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing it continue either, Bart. But this is, you nailed it right on the head. This is exactly what North Carolina is doing. I mean, the Tar Heels are sitting on the bubble. They had a game postponed against Boston College. So they had the opening in the schedule. There was this gap in the schedule for Marquette. So it works out. Now, if you're North Carolina, and inexplicably, if Marquette were to go into Chapel Hill and get the win, well, that will just eradicate any hopes North Carolina has of making it into the dance. But if you're Marquette, it's Chapel Hill. It's one of the, you know, homes of basketball, so to speak, at the college level. So you're getting exposure. You got guys on the team that, like freshman Dawson Garcia, Justin Lewis, who are getting this opportunity to walk into Chapel Hill. And for the seniors on the team, it's a nice road trip for them as well. So I get why Marquette did it. I'm interested to see how the game plays out because, again, it's all on North Carolina. This is, you know, this is almost the equivalent of a make or break as far as the Tar Heel season goes because that bubble could burst at any moment.
Yeah, I mean, I know that it's a possible this year. You know, this year is so different, and football, it was different. But I wonder if teams would be, because you can only play so many non-conference games, I wonder if teams would start to save one in the back pocket and try to make more of these things happen if they have that ability, or if they're just, you know, this is just like, oh, remember that one year that happened?
I'm afraid it's going to be an anomaly, and the only way I would love to see this continue on over the course of who knows however many years, as long as we don't see, like, Alabama in football at the end of the SEC season scheduling, you know, the blind sisters of wherever to roll in to play a non-conference
game. That's where I met my wife, Don.
To play a non-conference game just to kind of, you know, A, get those games in, but be against an opponent that just isn't of the same caliber. At least looking at Marquette and North Carolina, you can make a case that you've got two decent quality Division I programs going after each other.
College Sports Show every Tuesday night, 6 to 8 here on The Fan. And again, Marquette and North Carolina, a game that a week ago at this time was not anywhere on the schedule. They got it together over the weekend, and they're going to play it tonight. If anything, I think that this game and the BYU-Coastal Carolina game in football, I thought it was one of the best football games of the season in college. There was something on the line. Both of those teams were undefeated at the time, and there was a really outside shot to make the championship game, or the playoffs. But still, it was cool to see two programs that were on the same trajectory but not playing a quality opponent figure out a way to play each other, and BYU did the favor and went to Coastal Carolina. I think if it exposed anything this last season, and it's different now with getting fans there if you have tickets, although there were fans at that game. But college football, they're all like proud of themselves. Clemson in 2037, they already know that on November 28th of that year, they're going to play at South Carolina. And that's 16 years from now. Kids in that game are 2 years old right now. And they're going to play Notre Dame that year. I think we schedule these games 16 years in advance. And they're like, oh, well, you know, logistics. I think it's a farce because they've shown you that you can schedule a game within a couple of weeks. And yeah, it's pretty crazy for fans and stuff, but we go into these playoff situations. We don't know if the Bucks are going to play Saturday night or Tuesday or when are they going to play in Milwaukee? When are they going to play in Orlando? And it gets figured out pretty quickly. So I think that like it's cool to reach another opponent and say, all right, let's play somewhere down the road. But I think it's also pretty stupid that you got to wait. Like if you're Clemson, Notre Dame, you got to wait 16 years. They're both good when they schedule it. And then who knows what these programs are going to be or really what the state of college football is going to be. It's just kind of like, it's just a waste of time. I mean, they'll play this game, but they're not doing it for 16 years of hype. Bart Winkler, Sam Schmitz, Tim Allen set to join us. Rami's here.
Should I go to the mic?
Well,
go
I don't.
To the mic. I can talk into a microphone if you want me to.
Is that other mic still jacked?
Let's see. Yeah.
Rami, send a ticket. Do you know how to do that?
No idea. I'm part-time.
We'll be right back with Tim Allen.